A Very Dangerous New Year, by Robert Parry, Consortium News, Thursday 21 December 2006. The first two or three months of 2007 represent a dangerous opening for an escalation of war in the Middle East, as George W. Bush will be tempted to double down his gamble in Iraq, by joining with Israel's Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and outgoing British Prime Minister Tony Blair, to strike at Syria and Iran. Intelligence sources say President Bush's goal would be to transcend the bloody quagmire bogging down U.S. forces in Iraq, by achieving regime change in Syria, and by destroying nuclear facilities in Iran, two blows intended to weaken Islamic militants in Iraq, Lebanon and the Palestinian territories. The Israeli Army and Air Force would carry the brunt of the new fighting, albeit with the support of beefed-up U.S. ground and naval forces in the Middle East, the sources said. Bush is now considering a surge in U.S. troop levels in Iraq from about 140,000 to as many as 170,000. He also has dispatched a second aircraft carrier group to the coast of Iran. So far, however, Bush has confronted stiff opposition from the Pentagon's Joint Chiefs of Staff to the plan for raising troop levels in Iraq, partly because the generals don't think it makes sense to commit more troops without a specific military mission. But it's unclear how much the generals know about the expanded war agenda, which has been discussed sometimes in one-on-one meetings among the principals, Bush, Olmert, and Blair, according to intelligence sources. Since the November 7 congressional elections, the three leaders have conducted a round-robin of meetings that on the surface seem to have little purpose. Olmert met privately with Bush on November the 13th, Blair visited the White House on December the 7th, and Blair conferred with Olmert in Israel on December the 18th. All three leaders could salvage their reputations if a wider war broke out in the Middle East and then broke in their favor. Bush and Blair spearheaded the March 2003 invasion of Iraq that has since turned into a disastrous occupation. In August 2006, Olmert launched offensives against Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon, drawing international condemnation for the deaths of hundreds of civilians and domestic criticism for his poorly designed war plans. The three leaders also find themselves cornered by political opponents. Bush's Republican Party lost control of both the House and Senate on November 7. Blair succumbed to pressure from his own Labour Party and agreed to step down in spring 2007. And Olmert is suffering from widespread public disgust over the failed Lebanese war. Yet, despite these reversals, the three leaders have rebuffed advice from more moderate advisers that they adopt less confrontational strategies and consider unconditional negotiations with their Muslim adversaries. Most dramatically, Bush spurned a bipartisan Iraq study group plan that was co-authored by the Bush family's longtime counselor, former Secretary of State James Baker. Instead of heeding Baker's advice to begin a drawdown of U.S. troops from Iraq and start talks with Iran and Syria, Bush rejected the notion of a graceful exit, and then set unacceptable preconditions for talks with Iran and Syria. In other words, Baker tossed a life preserver to Bush, who threw it back. Victory agenda. Bush has continued to insist on victory in Iraq, and has again ratcheted up his rhetoric. He now talks about waging a long war against Islamic radicals and extremists, not just the original goal of defeating terrorists with global reach. At his news conference on December the 20th, Bush cast this wider struggle against Islamists as a test of American manhood and perseverance, by demonstrating to the enemy that they can't run us out of the Middle East, that they can't intimidate America. Bush suggested, too, that painful decisions lay ahead in the new year. I'm not going to make predictions about what 2007 will look like in Iraq, except that it's going to require difficult choices and additional sacrifices, because the enemy is merciless and violent, Bush said. Rather than scale back his neoconservative dream of transforming the Middle East, Bush argued for an expanded U.S. military to wage this long war. We must make sure that our military has the capability to stay in the fight for a long period of time, Bush said. I'm not predicting any particular theater, but I'm predicting that it's going to take a while for the ideology of liberty to finally triumph over the ideology of hate. We're in the beginning of a conflict between competing ideologies, a conflict that will determine whether or not your children can live in a peace. A failure in the Middle East, for example, or failure in Iraq, or isolationism, will condemn a generation of young Americans to permanent threat from overseas. So, rather than looking for a way out of the Iraq quagmire, Bush, now waist deep in the muck, is determined to press on. Bush's dilemma, however, is that time is working against him. Not only are the American people increasingly angry about U.S. troops caught in the middle of a sectarian civil war in Iraq, but Bush's domestic and international political bases continue to erode. Blair, who is widely derided in the United Kingdom as Bush's Boodle, is nearing the end of his tenure, and Bush's Republican Party is worried about election 2008, if American soldiers are still dying in Iraq in 2 years. Plus, few military analysts believe a temporary troop surge alone will stop the steady deterioration in Iraq. Bush acknowledged as much at his news conference. In order to do so, the surge, there must be a specific mission that can be accomplished with more troops, Bush said. That's precisely what our commanders have said, as well as people who know a lot about military operations. And I agree with them that there's got to be a specific mission that can be accomplished with the addition of more troops before I agree on that strategy. Though not making much sense as a way to quell the civil strife in Iraq, a U.S. military buildup could help protect American interests in Iraq, if Israeli attacks on Syria and Iran touch off retaliation against U.S. and British targets. Wider war for Bush, this idea of expanding the war outside Iraq also is not new. Since spring 2006, Bush reportedly has been weighing military options for bombing Iran's nuclear facilities, but he has encountered resistance from senior U.S. military officers. As investigative reporter Seymour Hersh wrote in The New Yorker, a number of senior U.S. officers were troubled by administration war planners who believed bunker-busting tactical nuclear weapons, known as B-61-11s, were the only way to destroy Iran's nuclear facilities buried deep underground. A former senior intelligence official told Hersh that the White House refused to remove the nuclear option from the plans despite objections from the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Whenever anybody tries to get it out, they're shouted down, the ex-official said. New Yorker, April 17, 2006. By late April 2006, however, the Joint Chiefs finally got the White House to agree that using nuclear weapons to destroy Iran's uranium enrichment plant Natanz, less than 200 miles south of Tehran, was politically unacceptable, Hersh reported. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney were dead serious about the nuclear planning, one former senior intelligence official said. But, even with the nuclear option off the table, senior U.S. military officials worried about the political and economic fallout from a massive bombing campaign against Iran. Hersh wrote inside the Pentagon, senior commanders have increasingly challenged the president's plans, according to active duty and retired officers and officials. The generals and admirals have told the administration that the bombing campaign will probably not succeed in destroying Iran's nuclear program. They have also warned that an attack could lead to serious economic, political, and military consequences for the United States. Hersh quoted a retired four-star general as saying, "The system is starting to sense the end of the road, and they don't want to be condemned by history. They want to be able to say, 'We stood up.'" New Yorker, July 10, 2006. Beyond the dangers from Iran's nuclear program, the Bush administration views the growing Shiite crescent across the Middle East as a threat to U.S. influence. Washington Post foreign policy analyst Robin Wright wrote that U.S. officials told her that for the United States, the broader goal is to strangle the axis of Hezbollah, Hamas, Syria and Iran, which the Bush administration believes is pulling resources to change the strategic playing field in the Middle East. Washington Post, July 16, 2006. By summer 2006, Israeli sources were describing Bush's interest in finding a pretext to hit back at Syria and Iran. That opening came when border tensions with Hamas in Gaza and with Hezbollah in Lebanon led to the capture of three Israeli soldiers and a rapid Israeli escalation of the conflict into an air and ground campaign against Lebanon. Bush and his neoconservative advisor saw the Israeli-Lebanese conflict as an opportunity to expand the fighting into Syria and achieve the long-sought regime change in Damascus, Israeli sources said. One Israeli source told me that Bush's interest in spreading the war to Syria was considered nuts by some senior Israeli officials, although Prime Minister Olmert generally shared Bush's hardline strategy against Islamic militants. See consortiumnews.com's Bush Wants Wider War. In an article on July 30, 2006, the Jerusalem Post also hinted at the Israeli rejection of Bush's suggestion of a wider war into Syria. Defense officials told the Post that they were receiving indications from the US that America would be interested in seeing Israel attack Syria, the newspaper reported. In August 2006, the Interpress service provided additional details, reporting that the message was passed to Israel by Bush's deputy national security adviser Elliot Abrams, who had been a central figure in the Iran-Contra scandal of the 1980s. In a meeting with a very senior Israeli official, Abrams indicated that Washington would have no objection if Israel chose to extend the war beyond to its southern northern neighbor, leaving the interlocutor in no doubt that the intended target was Syria, a source told the Interpress service. In December 2006, Meir Wormser, a leading U.S. neoconservative whose spouse is a Middle East advisor to Vice President Cheney, confirmed that neocons in and outside the Bush administration had hoped Israel would attack Syria as a means of undermining the insurgents in Iraq. If Syria had been defeated, the rebellion in Iraq would have ended, Wormser said in an interview with Yitzhak Ben-Haron of the Enet website. A great part of it was the thought that Israel should fight against the real enemy, the one backing Hezbollah. If Israel had hit Syria, it would have been such a harsh blow for Iran that it would have weakened it and changed the strategic map in the Middle East. In early 2007, the revival of this neoconservative strategy of using the Israeli military to oust the Syrian government and to inflict damage on Iran's nuclear program may represent a last-ditch and high-risk gamble by Bush and the neocons to salvage their historic legacy. If that is the case, then Bush will approve the surge in U.S. forces into Iraq, which likely will be followed by some provocation that can be blamed on Syria or Iran, thus justifying the expanded war. Betting the lives of American soldiers and countless civilians across the Middle East, Bush will follow the age-old adage of gambling addicts in for a dime, in for a dollar. Robert Parry broke many of the Iran-Contra stories in the 1980s for the Associated Press and Newsweek. His latest book, Secrecy and Privilege: Rise of the Bush Dynasty from Watergate to Iraq, can be ordered at secretionprivilege.com. It's also available at amazon.com, as is his 1999 book, Lost History Contras, Cocaine, The Press and Project Truth.